Hey, man, I want to get straight to our guest line and bring in a gentleman that we're honored to have here on the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with your hosts, Ricky Hampton and Michael Robinson. This brother's a poet. He's an activist. He's an actor. He's a writer. Mm-hmm. He's a husband and a father. Hey, he's also a pretty good basketball player who played 11 seasons in the National Basketball Association. The pride of the Syracuse Orange man, the one and only Etan Thomas. Etan, are you there?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
All right.
Man, how you doing,
brother?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I'm blessed. Thanks for having me on the show. You know, I'm blessed. Can't complain too much.
All right.
Man, it's a pleasure to have you on because there's so much going on in this world.
Right.
Not only behind the sports you played so well for so long, but in the world in general, as we head into, ironically, what is the 4th of July holiday.
Right.
Let's talk a little basketball first, and then I want to move into some of the other things, because you are, I mean, Etan, you are the example of the athlete activist, and I know that you know this is 50 years since the Mexico Olympics with Tommy Smith and John Carlos and Dr. Edwards, who's a great friend of this show. And, you know, it looks like the same things that those gentlemen were fighting for then, we're still fighting for 50 years later.
Right.
In fact, let me just get your thoughts on that before we do get into basketball.
Oh, well, I have a lot of respect for them, for Dr. John Carlos and Dr. Harry Edwards. You know, I just wrote a new book called We Matter, Athletes and Activism, and those were two of the people that I interviewed. I interviewed a lot of different athletes and a lot of different activists, and, you know, we've talked about this thing called activism. And, you know, their interviews were – it was such an honor to be able to interview them. You know, I told John Carlos, I was like, listen, I grew up with a poster of you on my wall in high school, had it in college, you know what I mean? I still have one now up in my office, you know, in my house now. I mean, they was the epitome of using your position and your platform to stand up for something more, you know what I mean? And that was just something that I just gravitated to from a young age. And everything that Dr. Harry Edwards did, and, you know, of constructing the 68 boycott. And, you know, it's funny, in my book, we talked a lot about O.J. because, you know, O.J. was kind of the opposite at that time.
Right.
You know, he didn't want to speak out or anything. I wanted to ask him about that. And I have just a lot of tremendous respect for both of them. But they are definitely athlete activists that all athletes need to read about and learn about and, you know, really be able to pattern themselves after as far as standing up for what they believe in.
Well, Etan, so you just reached a milestone, you know, hitting 40. So how does that feel? And then you're born in Harlem, but you're born in Harlem, but you grew up in Tulsa. So,
right.
What was the scenario there? Did you guys move when you were real young, and did you get any culture of Harlem with your rich history for African Americans?
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, Tulsa had its situations too.
Right, right. Well, you know, my dad got transferred with American Airlines when I was young, so that's how we ended up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But then I would always spend my summers in Harlem, because both sides of the family were everybody's from New York, so you know I got both worlds, and there's a lot of history in both worlds. I mean, you know, when I was in Tulsa, you know, we had the Tulsa race riots, we had Black Wall Street,
in
1920s,
exactly.
And you know, when I left Tulsa, I was surprised that so many people didn't know about it because I grew up learning about it. You know, I mean, I went to college in Syracuse. I remember in an African-American studies class, I was like, wait, y'all don't know what happened? You know what I mean? They were like, we heard about it a little bit. And it was such an amazing, I mean, everything that the black community had in the 1920s. I mean, they didn't have to go across the railroad tracks for anything, like nothing.
Right.
They had their own movie theater, banks, grocery store, everything. And this is the 1920s, you know, and white people just got jealous and they burned it down. That's basically what happened. And it was so constructed with the police and bombs and everything like that.
Right.
And that's just a history that people need to know about. But, you know, I grew up around it. It was like, you know, 10 minutes from my house that I grew up in. So a lot of history.
And going to Booker T. Washington High School was a big deal there. The traditions there with the football team and Tulsa, home of the Gap Band, correct?
The Gap Band, okay. Did a little homework.
Yes, sir.
That's right.
You know what? I know a lot about. I'll tell you my familiarity with Tulsa. A good friend of mine in doing my sports writing days here in Detroit is a Tulsa native, Jay Berry.
Okay.
Jay,
okay.
Do you know Jay? Are you familiar with him?
I'm familiar with the name. I can't place the face though, but I'm familiar with the name, so I've seen articles.
Jay Berry. Yeah, an award-winning sports journalist,
mm-hmm.
played at Booker T. Washington. Jay was part of the Wyoming 14.
Okay.
The Black 14 at Wyoming, who were going to wear the armbands against BYU. And brothers, and Mike, I know you know the story. Tom, you may be familiar. They went into the meeting and – the coach, they were going to suggest to the coach, hey, we're thinking about doing this. He didn't. The fact they went in there, they got kicked off the team.
Kicked off the team immediately. Yeah.
The funny thing about Jay, I've known Jay 30 years now, and I did not know his story until recently. But, he was from there, and the Gap Band is named, I think the streets are Garfield or.
No.
I forget.
Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. Greenwood, Archer, and Pine.
Archer and Pine. Yeah, I passed there all the time driving up to school. That was I passed it. You know, that we grew up listening to the Gap Band every Juneteenth. So it was like we was just treated with it. Every Juneteenth, they would be performing. Wayman Tisdale would be performing. And you know what I mean? In the park, it would be a big celebration every year.
Yes.
Well, speaking of that, Ethan, how did you not go to Oklahoma, you know, being that Wayman had that big influence? And I know maybe you wanted to go back to New York, and Syracuse is a very fine school, but is that the scenario?
That was. You know, I like I said, all my family is from New York, and I grew up really loving the Big East, back when the Big East was the Big East, you know. And seeing those Georgetown and Syracuse rivals and Villanova and St. I loved that. I loved the way that they played, the gritty, the banging. I just loved that. And so I already knew I wanted to go, you know, somewhere in the Big East. And it was kind of a big thing because, you know, Booker T. Washington, you know, to OU, you know, half of my class went to OU, you know what I mean, Oklahoma University. So it was a big, big thing. But, you know, I'm always happy with my decision.
That's a good one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And my good friend Mike Waters from the Post Standard.
Mike Waters.
Greetings. Yes, sir. Mike and I started off in the business together working down in Nashville. And we left Nashville. I went to Detroit, and I've been in Detroit, and Mike has been at Syracuse. But I was talking to Mike about you today, man, and he said – you were the most mature young man that came into school. And he said it was as a great compliment, Atan, and that you always saw beyond and thought beyond the basketball court. And tell our listeners out there what was your impact? What made you such a thoughtful person at such a young age?
Well, you know, I grew up, you know, around a lot of culture, a lot of learning about my history. My mother taught me a lot starting at a very young age. And, you know, first it started like in the seventh grade, I picked up the autobiography of Malcolm X. And that kind of changed everything. And then I just wanted to read everything. And so my mom was just really just feeding me stuff to read. I mean, just everything. Here goes, you know, Frederick Douglass. Here goes, you know what I mean, Uncle Tom's Cabin. Here goes, you know what I mean, we're going to teach you about Jim Brown. We're going to teach you about these athletes. We're going to teach you about the athletes. And she taught me about all these things and just kept feeding me books because I was like, okay, why am I not learning any of this stuff in school? You know, she's like, well, don't worry. I got all the stuff right here in the library. And I was reading Roots at like, you know, eighth, ninth grade, you know, from Alex Haley, big, thick book. And I was just reading through it. And so that thirst for knowledge just kept going. So then in high school, I started getting into speech and debate. And I started, you know, debating different topics. I wanted to, you know, talk about topics like Malcolm X did and, you know, write speeches like Malcolm X did and stuff like that. So I just kind of kept doing it and kept doing it all through high school. It just happened that I also played ball. You know what I mean? So I had a big platform to do what I was doing. So then they I just kind of kept going.
And you notice, Aton, in our introduction, the last thing I mentioned about you was the fact you played basketball National Basketball Association. And I said I wanted to say that as a compliment to you as clearly a Renaissance man, and especially, you know, learning that you could pick all that up at such a young age is really impressive. I mean, you were clearly, literally the big man on campus, I'm sure. I mean, how did you keep all that stuff? What kept you grounded?
Oh, well, because, you know, I my grandfather teaching me at a young age and not to be impressed by all that attention, because it's all like it's just a show. Like, just as soon as they all love you, they can all hate you if you have a bad game. And that's not real love. You know what I mean? So I had it all in perspective.
Yeah.
You know, so I would I never got the big head. I never got it, you know, just because I'm, you know, doing well in basketball and the papers are writing about me and everything like that. I just kind of waited because I was going to have a bad game eventually. And sure enough, the newspapers turn on you. Mike Waters, you know, it's his job, but he has to write badly and poorly about you and everything like that. So it's just you see it for what it is, so you don't get sucked in. I think a lot of times, guys, you know, they start to believe the hype. And, you know, I was just talking to my son, and he was watching Neymar and how Neymar struggled in the World Cup, and now they were talking about him. And the article said, you know, embarrassment to soccer or something like that. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I was like, you see how they had – he was like God's gift to the sport a few weeks ago, and now he's an international embarrassment. So I'm like teaching him, you know, what I was taught, just to know that it's just – it's all a fake love. It's not real. So don't get too high. Don't get too low. Just stay even keel and do you, you know?
Okay.
Let me just get everybody caught up, Mike. Then we'll go to you. You're listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with Mike Robinson and Ricky Hampton. Our special guest tonight is Aton Thomas, former Syracuse Orange man, 11-year veteran of the National Basketball Association, poet, author, activist, writer, actor. We got to get into how you got to become a thespian, man, before you get out of here. And, oh, yeah, he happened to be a pretty good basketball player. Go ahead, Mike.
All right, so going back to Malcolm X, now, before I get to the question, so it's funny when you talk about debate, because I went to the great Tennessee State University, and we had a thing called Great Debate where we had the Malcolm X family, the Martin Luther King family, and the Synthesis family. And we had our debate over at Vanderbilt. And Dr. Karenga was actually there, from the Kwanzaa creator. So and then so that was our thing. Like, you had to come up with your Malcolm X argument, then you had to come up with your Martin Luther King argument, then that Synthesis was the in-between, which one of both. So when you talked about the debate, that was kind of brought me back to that. But back to Malcolm, with his huge connection to Harlem and unfortunately being killed at the Audubon, what was that like, knowing that he had a big influence on Harlem? And then had you ever gone to the Audubon Theater?
Of course. You know, I mean, we lived in Spanish Harlem on 111th Street, right off of FDR Drive.
Okay.
But I loved 125th Street. And that was before Giuliani moved. If you're familiar with 125th Street, and you remember how all the everything was in, the vendors was all on the street and everything like that, and it was just for blocks. I loved that. So I remember being young, just wanting to go up there and just walk around and just stay up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, just listen to the brothers and the drums. You know, talk to the Muslims over here. You know, talk to different people selling different things. Just walk around, and just the culture and the energy that was just surrounding Harlem was just beautiful. You know what I mean? I mean, and now, you know, it's a little gentrified, so it's a little bit different. But you still see the spirit of Harlem is still there. You know, even with the gentrification. You know, even with the different. You know, it's not the same Harlem that I remember when I was young.
Right.
To Harlem. But going back to all the historical parts, you know, my grandparents would especially take me and see the Audubon and see where, you know, that's where he first taught me about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, when he right. where he went to Power Memorial, I think it was the name of the school,
yeah.
and the park that
yeah.
he used to play at, and you know, everything was always a lesson with my grandfather all through Harlem.
Mm.
You know, and it was
nice.
It's just a beautiful experience. That's the only way I can say it.
All right.
Hey, Todd, we've got our listeners lined up wanting to talk to you. We
okay.
hope we could take a few questions from some of our listeners. But before we get to that, man, you talk about the pressure of athletes and the scrutiny that they are under. And it happens at the NCAA level, too, where, you know, we talk about 19, 20-year-old kids when they play bad as if
right.
they've been playing 10 years in the National Basketball Association. Considering all that and all the other things that college athletes go through and the money that is being made, what are your thoughts on compensation for NCAA athletes? Is the college scholarship still a good deal for the 4-year or 5-year experience there?
So this is a topic. I devoted a whole chapter of this in my book, We Matter, Athletes and Activism.
Okay.
And I interviewed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and talked to him about it. And if you remember the Fab Five, you know, because I grew up
right.
in the
oh,
Fab
yeah.
Five era. I was young
yeah,
watching
exactly.
them.
I'm in Detroit, so.
Okay, yeah. of course. All right. So I'm talking to Juwan Howard and Ray Jackson and Jimmy King and asking them about how they felt about it, because I remember in their book, they're talking about how their freshman year, it was all fun, and they was, you know, having a blast and everything like that, and they're all freshmen, and they come in, they change the game with the baggy shorts, everything like that. And then their sophomore year, they looked around, they're like, wait a minute, you know, they're selling our jerseys up here, you know, they're making all this money off of us. There's all of these people that are in the stands, they're making concessions, they have all of this stuff, and we're not getting any of it. And they're like, wait a minute, this ain't cool no more. We kind of getting exploited. And that's pretty much what I talked about in the book and talking to different people as far as when the NCAA first had the deal back in maybe a few decades ago, it was a good little trade-off. You know what I mean? You play ball, you know what I mean? You get a free education, you get a scholarship, it's a good trade-off. But now, you know, with the TV contracts and, you know, Syracuse and the Carrier Dome, it's 30,000 people in there. You know what I mean? Every
yeah.
single game,
yeah.
some of the TV
yeah.
contracts can rival some professional teams. It's a billion-dollar
yeah.
business with a B, a billion-dollar business.
Yeah.
So you can't
right.
even looking at it from economic standpoint and say that their little scholarship equals the amount of money that they're being made, and it's a fair trade-off. It's just economically they're taking advantage. So the example that I always give and was that it's kind of like when a company, say like a Nike, goes into a underdeveloped country and sets up like a big factory there, right? And so they hire the people there and they give them pennies while they make millions. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's kind of how
yep.
the NCAA is right now. So they say, okay, you have the opportunity. You wouldn't have these pennies if we wouldn't give them to you. We're like, okay, that's fair enough. But you're making millions off of this. So it's not really, you're not really doing the people any favors. You're actually exploiting them.
Absolutely.
Yep, that's true.
I totally agree. Hey, let's go to our phone line and bring in
all
some
right.
listeners. And I'm sure we got a few people who want some questions with you. Area code 717. You are on the air with Aton Thomas. Last 4 digits 2137.
Yeah. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Hey, Ray. Is this Raymond?
Yes, it is.
All right.
How you doing? Can you hear me?
All right.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
I'm good. Yeah. I heard you mention Power Memorial Academy. That happened to be the school that I also went to and growing up in New York City. And one of the things about Power, when the minute that you walked through the door, they had a picture of, it was Lou Alcindor at the time, but it was encased. Kareem, you know, it was Lou Alcindor number 33 and held it up with great reverence. But the school's no longer in existence. I think they shut it down and
right.
it's they turned it into I want to say condominiums now, so if I haven't been up there in a minute, but they shut it down in the early 80s, one of the many schools, Catholic schools that they've demolished. But I like what you say in terms of this is a business. And when I look at the perspective of what is going on, I made a comment on my Facebook that whether you like or dislike LeBron James, you have to love his business acumen and how he's been able to become the most powerful person in the sport of basketball.
Right.
More powerful than any owner, the commissioner. He moves the timeline. What he does makes the basketball world stand still. And he has the ability to say that he's going to a certain city or play for a certain team, and everybody follows. And he's basically, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, all the control of basketball was deemed by you know, David Stern and the owners, you know, and they would always beat the players into submission with the collective bargaining system. And now all that has changed. And now, you know, they say if Paul George re-ups after his 4 years and goes back for the next three, he has the opportunity to make almost $280 million. It's just amazing. That is the way that you could drive wealth back into our communities and create a chance for people of color to do some amazing things.
I agree. I definitely agree. And, you know, it's interesting. LeBron James's name comes up a lot now, especially with athletes and activism and the way that he's been spoken out. And he's not an athlete who, you know, with the position that he is in and how much power he has, you know, he doesn't take on the role of the silent athlete because he doesn't want to offend some of his fan base. And that's one of the things that I have so much respect about him for, because he doesn't take that. You know, if you go all the way back with OJ, that was kind of the thought. Like, he wants to make all the money and be in all the commercials and all the endorsements, so he doesn't want to say anything that's going to upset anybody in mainstream America. So he said, I'm not black, I'm OJ. You know, but LeBron, he doesn't take that. You know, he's talking about the president. He's wearing the I Can't Breathe shirt after Eric Garner's killed. You know what I mean? He's posing in the hoodie. He's talking about Trayvon Martin after Trayvon Martin is killed. So he's putting himself out there for ridicule, you know what I mean, from mainstream America, and saying that, no, I am a man, and I can speak on these things, and you have to respect me for it. So that's you know, I'm a fan of his, you know, on the court, but off the court, the fact that he does that and his business sense, that puts him in a whole different category. So I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, I do. What you do on the court, it's just one thing, but his ability. And not only that, he's empowered so many people. Look at his team. You know, one of the things that I found interesting that Pat Riley spoke to was when he was in the process of leaving Miami. And Pat Riley said he walked in there with championship rings and trophies and all of that to try to entice LeBron to re-up with the Heat. But LeBron wasn't even in there. He wasn't even in the room. It was his management team, and they were watching the World Cup. And Pat Riley was the second thought, and you know he stayed around. And he said at that moment he realized that LeBron wasn't coming back. They scheduled a meeting and LeBron wasn't even there, and those guys were watching stock, and they said, well, we'll get back in contact with you. And he was like, wow, how powerful this guy has become.
Right.
So,
I agree. Well,
thank you for checking in, Brother Ray. Hey, and tell a ton about your radio network while we got you on.
Wow. Eton, we are the African American Sports Talk Radio Show Network in the business. We have shifted in terms of the dialogue, in terms of the conversation. We have over 10, 11 shows now from New York to L.A. and every place in between. We're growing the network. It's a place for people to come and just talk sports. And we've had we have everything from NASCAR to hockey. We have people from horse racing. We're in places all across the country. We're just growing this thing. And we want to be the first 24-hour sports talk radio show network, and that's where we're driving this thing and pushing it forward.
That's great. That sounds great.
Yeah, and all from a black perspective. Hey, thank you, Ray, man. We certainly appreciate you and the work you guys are doing at Talk to Me Sports Network. Hey, Atan, I think you agree with me that we stand on the shoulders of giants, not only in the world of sports, you know, in every walk of life as people of color here in the United States. Do you think as athletes that there's a responsibility to continue that journey, or are these guys just their only responsibility is to themselves and their family?
So this is a topic as well. You ask me all the questions that I ask, so I keep referring to it. But so in my book, Athletes and Activism, we talked about that as well. And one of the things that I talked to different sports journalists. Like I talked to Michael Wilbon and Jamel Hill and, you know, Soledad O'Brien, and they asked me certain things like that. And this is what I think. This is what I think about that topic. For me, it was part of me. You know what I mean? So there was no me without me speaking out. You know what I mean? Without me carrying on the tradition. I can't make it a requirement for somebody else if that's not what they're comfortable of doing. But what I say is I don't like to use the word responsibility to do it, but I like to use the word that they have a huge opportunity. They have a huge opportunity to be able to make a dent in a lot of things. I mean, when one of the things that I did in my book was I interviewed the family of the victims of police brutality. So I interviewed Trayvon Martin's brother, Javaris Fulton, and I interviewed Eric Garner's daughter, Emerald, and Terrence Crutcher's sister, and Fernando Castile's mother and sister, and asked them about how they felt when athletes spoke up on their behalf. You know what I mean? And one of the things that Trayvon Martin's brother said to me that really kind of threw me off of there a little bit, but he said, you know, if it weren't for, you know, athletes, many people wouldn't know my brother's name. And I was like, you know, that's kind of saying a lot, you know. Why would you say that? He was like, well, and he said, well, a lot of people don't know this. He's like, but when Trayvon was first killed, the family was trying hard to get the local news to cover it, and they didn't want to cover it. He said they told them, well, it's just another young black man being killed. This isn't really a story. And I was like, wow, that's what they told you? And he was like, yeah. He's like, but then you had Dwayne Wade and LeBron James, you know, and the entire Miami Heat team wear the hoodies, and then they're talking about in the papers about why they're doing it. And so Dwayne Wade was also one of the people that I interviewed, so I'm talking in depth with him about why he didn't. He's saying things like, you know, when he saw Trayvon Martin, he thought about his sons, and he puts a hoodie on his son. He looks just like Trayvon Martin, and he had this personal connection to it. And then that's when Javaris said that people started paying attention, like, okay, well, what is this that has LeBron James and the whole Miami Heat kind of riled up, you know? And then you started seeing news articles and then different attention being made and stuff like that. He's like, but at first, he's like, they couldn't get anybody to cover it. He's like, it was a while before anybody did. And that just shows the power of athletes using their voice. So what I wanted to do with this book was to really use all these different voices, you know, from Kareem to Bill Russell to Oscar Robertson, and then current voices like Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade and, you know what I mean, Eric Reed and Michael Bennett and all these different athletes, and show them using their voice and the power behind it and encourage younger athletes to continue this tradition. You know what I mean? Not necessarily saying that they're required or push them or chastise them if they don't, but I wanted to make it where they want to speak out, where they see the effectiveness of it and the power of their voice. So that was kind of the goal with this book.
Hmm. Wow.
That's fantastic.
So I got this question for you. So you come out in 2000, pick overall, lottery pick per se. And, you know, the Dallas situation, you didn't play there, but you ended up in Washington. But then a couple years later, Carmelo's the big freshman star at Syracuse.
Uh-huh.
LeBron's doing his thing in high school. And then Wade did his thing at Marquette. So when those guys came out, did you think that they would be, you know, at this echelon, especially like a LeBron, to be doing all these great things he's doing? Because remember, this guy was on TV as a high schooler. He was a two-time player of the year and had all the accolades and all the pressure and everything that was going on him, and Sports Illustrated covering all that. So when you saw them coming out, what were you thinking? Because you were already in the pros yourself.
Well, you know, I've known Carmelo, and I, you know, went up there and played with him up at Syracuse, so I knew his mindset, and he was somebody who was very mature for his age. You know, I got a chance to interview him for this book, and he's somebody who's been speaking out and using his voice as far as activism. Remember, he marched with the people of Baltimore after Freddie Gray was killed. You know,
right,
he was down
right,
there
yeah.
marching with them and telling the people. So he's somebody who is very, unafraid to use his voice. Same as with Dwayne Wade. I've been on different panels with Dwayne Wade, and I interviewed him for this book, and talking about he's been using his voice. You know, it's interesting because it's this new age of athletes. They're not really afraid. You know what I mean? They don't sound like they're nervous or worried at all about using their voice, and it's great to see. You know, I interviewed Russell Westbrook for the book, and one of the things, you know, he's in Oklahoma, Oklahoma City. Now, Terrence Crutcher
right,
gets
right.
killed in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You know what I mean? And if you know Oklahoma, Oklahoma is a very conservative state. It's right above Texas.
Right.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? But Russell
right.
Westbrook came out strong against the killing and saying that this is wrong. You know what I mean? Like, he was pulled over. You know, he pulled over and had car trouble, and the policeman came
right.
up, and he actually thought the policeman was going to come help him or something like that, and they ended up
right.
looking at him as a threat. So he's going off during a press conference saying all this stuff and saying how wrong it is and how it's not right. You know, well, he's saying this to a whole conservative fan base. You know what I mean? And I'm saying, well, did you
right.
have any fear of anything or think that your fans are going to turn on you? He was like, not at all, not even one bit. Like, that never crossed my mm-hmm. mind. So I just really respect all of these young athletes who are using their voice kind of without fear right now. And that's why I really want to encourage younger athletes, because, you know, they have such a strong voice. I mean, especially now with social media. I mean, LeBron has
Absolutely.
More Twitter followers than the President of the United States. You know what I mean? I mean, he comes out
Absolutely.
And says something, people hear it. So it's you really want, you know, these guys to keep using their voices and keep encouraging them. I can't encourage them enough to do it.
And, you know, I when I think of athletes and activism, I think about 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf,
right.
who we've had on the show, and the
uh-huh.
courage it must have taken for him to make that stand at that time. And then you go back even further, the courage of men like Ali, of Mr. Russell, and all these guys to stand up, because they did not have the backing of the social media, you didn't have the platform. But man, as Mahmoud told us, you know, we asked him, would you do it all over again? He said he'd do the same thing, because he
right.
had no choice, because that's how he felt about the issue, And, you know, I think history is going to remember all those guys well. And you see now, though, Atan, with what happened with Colin Kaepernick and what's happening with Eric Reed in the NFL, and you see a little hesitancy from some of the guys there. You still got some guys seeking out. But you don't see it coming as strong as you do from the guys in the NBA. And I think this says a lot about the policies and the player associations of those two leagues. Could you kind of speak
to
that?
Well, I dealt with this a lot, because I interviewed Eric Reed and Michael Bennett and Torrey Smith and all those guys, and I asked them that. And I will say that the NFL is night and day from the NBA right now. You know, I interviewed
yeah.
people in ownership positions in the NBA. So I interviewed the commissioner, Adam Silver, in the book, because I wanted to ask him how he felt about, you know, and get him on record about how he felt about activism and if he would punish players, you know, for speaking out and things of that nature. And he said, you know, unequivocally, no. He's like, I would not punish anybody. I encourage guys to speak out. He's like, we have a rich tradition of athletes and activism and athletes using their voices in the NBA. You know what I mean? I interviewed Mark Cuban, who was the CEO of the Mavericks, and interviewed Ted Leonsis of the Wizards. You know what I mean? They both, and I've asked them both the same thing. You know, how do you feel about your players using their voices? And, you know, and he said no. He's like, they love when players use their voices. And, you know, and I just don't think you would hear that same thing from Jerry Jones and Dan Snyder. And I didn't get to interview any NFL you know, CEOs or anything like that, but you just wouldn't
right.
hear them say that. And I already know that. You wouldn't hear Roger Goodell say what Adam Silver said to me in the book. And it's a totally different league. The NFL kind of wants to shut players up. They're keeping. Guess what? And this is why I hope that Kaepernick wins this suit that he has against the NFL. Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to scare, like a scare tactic to all future NFL athlete activists, that if you step out of line, you too will be Kaepernicked. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what they're doing right now with Eric Reed, you know, and specifically keeping them out the league. There's no reason that they should not be in the league. You know what I mean? That's why there has to be. I hope they are able to prove this collusion against the NFL. I really do, because what they're doing is not right.
It is so wrong, man. You know, and I'm reading today, Jay Cutler said, well, I think I'm retired now. I'm like, dude, you were retired when you were playing last year.
Yeah.
You gave that dude $10 million.
No question.
I know, just a joke, just a joke.
So they'd rather do that than have Kaepernick. That's crazy, the whole thing.
Really?
Yep.
Yes, you know, hey, that just gets me all wired the time. So let me keep it moving here. Hey, I want to
bring
bad,
in, my man, bad.
No, it's my bad, brother. We got some. We appreciate you, number one, for joining us, and you're listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with Michael Robinson and Ricky Hampton, columnists for the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Be sure to go to our website and check us out there. But we're joined tonight by Eitan Thomas, a Renaissance man who happens to be a 11-year veteran of the National Basketball Association. I want to go to area code 540, last three digits, 3856, and bring in an interesting guy, Eitan. This brother's name is Robert T. Green, and he's the CEO of Pre-Post Game, Inc., and he's doing some tremendous work on the behalf of young athletes around the country, in particular, young African-American athletes. Hey, Rob, welcome to the show, man. And first of all, tell Eitan about what you're doing at a pre-post game and then your comment and question.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I thank you guys for having me on, Mr. Robinson and Mr. Hampton. It's always a pleasure. Mr. Thomas, and I appreciate what you do for your work and transition from an athlete to being more than an athlete, obviously, prior to being able to articulate who you are. When people see you now, they know you're tall, you play basketball, but you got so much more within you. So my company in particular, called Pre-Post Game, as you know, as an athlete, one of the most important things you have to do is your pregame and then also the postgame. So reality is what we do from athletes' perspective is teaching them about the business principles at the earliest stages of sports, even what's going on now with the AAU, Showcase, Circus, all these different things. There's so many runners out there that are, I tell everybody, you become a pro athlete the moment someone's willing to pay to watch you play. Even when you sign a contract in the beginning, when you get your, you know, go to the AAU tournament, you're taking money in, but all of a sudden now you're hurt, the parents are responsible for your insurance. So it's backwards. So, again, when you start to learn that way, as you continue to go through these things, like, you know, this today was a Nike Open, it was being finished. About 300 kids, slap a number on their back, free advertising, free marketing. Kids don't realize what's going on next, but those parents spending thousands of dollars on hotel rooms and flights, not realizing what's going on at the same time. Same coaches in those schools, sending those kids down there to get them to recruit somebody else so they can put money in their pocket in six and seven figures. So at pre-post game, we teach you the business principles, be a business, your own business on and off the field, also with character development, transition succession planning. So work with every athlete, high school, college pros, and explain to them. Like I said, they got questions about things, we give it to them straight. We don't sugarcoat nothing. We don't kick back. We don't refer anybody. The bottom line is somebody going to say something to you. We talk about education and power protection. So it's a simple business principle in life, too. Like, so if somebody's talking to me about something, I'm listening for, are they educating me on something I didn't know of before? Are they empowering me? I might need them today, but are they empowering me for something I can do tomorrow? And then most importantly, protecting me in this business. When 80% go broke, why did it go broke? If you come tell me about there's a nice steak restaurant over there and chicken salad and my shoes look nice and I'm not interested in that. So once again, we talk about what you go from point A to point Z. That's what we do at every level. So, again, I appreciate what you've been doing because, again, I promote all people such as yourself that actually can show, like, you know what, you're more than an athlete, and at the end of the day, no matter what people tell you to do, you can do a lot of different things. If you apply yourself the same way you did to become a pro athlete, you can do the same thing as you already shown what you do with your books and other things. So I appreciate you.
That's what's up. Well, I definitely appreciate those words, and I appreciate what you do. You know, I mean, raising awareness. I mean, I started coaching my son's AAU team now, and the little guys, and just seeing how much of a business it is right now, and especially with the advertisements and the shoe companies, and the way that they're, like you said, it's almost like they're little professionals. They're just not getting paid yet, but they're advertising, and other people are getting paid off of them.
Think about this in sports. The moment that you go, whether it's Modell's or Dick's Sporting Goods, and you put a bat or jersey or some type of uniform on this kid, they're being trained, institutionalized, thinking that literally this is what they like to do, what they want to do. And as you go forward in that, like if, for example, we talk about a soccer mom. You know the rate of what women's professional soccer get make without endorsements is nothing, but it's a $15 billion industry when they're kids. So when you start to institutionalize the thought process of men, that's why athletes have the power that they have, because no matter what the kid, no matter where they come from, they all played sports. They all tied in. So the industry done figured that out a long time ago. That's why it's, you know, places like Nike or Adidas or Armour, they go and give out a couple of T-shirts and shirts. Because once now all these kids realize, you know what, from a status symbol, I want to wear that shoe. Now all of a sudden the kids that's coming behind them do the same exact thing, even if they can't afford it. So this is what this is all about. And so for me, waiting until a kid becomes 18, 19 is too late. It's too late, and not in the sports world today. Too late for that parent too, because again, we teach them so many different things about, oh, this guy said this. Even talking about loss of value policies and insurance, where this university is making millions off the kid, but they don't tell the kid that they qualify for this insurance. So a company like mine has to tell them that, like, this is what you qualify for. So it's like, wow, why did they tell me? So that's how we end up saying, man, they really aren't in it. Like, it's only a couple thousand dollars. You're making me, I'm making you millions, but yet still, you don't want to give me insurance to protect myself. Mm-hmm. So again, at the end of the day, this is where it is. And so now you gotta look at it as a business. You can't look at it as, oh, they love me, because you know that phrase, next man up, all type of coach speak. You know, it wouldn't be fair. You're gonna play. Oh, good cop, bad cop. You know, the coach said yeah, but the compliance said no. So we teach these parents and kids all this stuff. Because now, again, when people told me 3 years ago when I was doing this business that this transfer rule would never change, and I said it will. Because if you end up seeing some of my stuff, Ricky can tell you, I just sent something today to Betsy DeVos and Mark Emmert about they wanted to stop African-Americans from having diversity go back into schools. But I said, not the athletes, though. I went to school in Massachusetts. I was the only black kid there played football or basketball. So that's it. So at the end of the day, you take billions off of us, but you can stop everybody else from being educated. So I teach the athletes, you got to be educated. You can't just basically be he say, she say anymore. Can't just say, oh, somebody say, I'll take care of it. No. If they take care of it now, they're taking care of it later, and that's when you go broke. So, like I said, again, I don't want to take up too much time, but like I said, I wanted to thank you for what you're doing for your platform, because like I said, at the end of the day, you're not playing anymore, but yet your platform is still relevant, and that's what we're saying. You could be as just successful as you want to be, regardless of the fact, and like I said, continue the great work that you're doing, sir, and I appreciate you.
Appreciate it.
No problem.
Hey, it's time. Todd, I just want you to hold on for 1 second here, man. We got a guy that just called in, and I want all our listeners across the country to meet this young man, the pride of Flint, Michigan. To our listeners out there, a lot of you guys know that I actually went to school on a golf scholarship and grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. My father was actually a golf pro, one of the pioneers of the game. So, man, when I came to Flint as a sports writer for the Flint Journal, I always thought I was the best town until I saw this young man hit the ball when he was just a little kid. His name is Willie Mack III. And, guys, 2 days ago, Willie Mack shot a 12-under par 60 at a qualifier. No, it was yesterday. 12-under par 60 at the qualifier for the Web.com Open up in New York. Hey, Willie, welcome to the African American Athlete. You're on with Ricky Hampton, Michael Robinson, and Aton Thomas. And, man, I just want to congratulate you on that fantastic round. And tell us quickly about your round, because I know you got to get up and practice in the morning, and where you are in terms of your pro career right now.
All right, thanks. That 60 was pretty nice. I beat the course record by three strokes. So it's kind of like one of those rounds you just black out and just make everything.
Yeah. Hey, Aton, are you
up for it? Oh, I'm sorry. Say it again.
I was asking Are you much of a golfer?
No, I'm not. I've been on a few charity events, but I'm not much of a golfer. I'm honestly not. But I appreciate the sport, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate
it. And that's why I really wanted to let our listeners know about this young brother out of Flint, Michigan, and he is headed towards the PGA Tour. I am confident of that because he's got everything you need to get there. Willie, what is going on with you right now? Where have you been playing? And just get us up to date before we let you go.
I'm playing on actually the Latin American Tour in South and Central America. So right now it's on a break. We start back in September. I think the first two events are in Brazil. One of the courses where they had the Olympics, actually. So that would be pretty nice. And just trying to do these Mondays and get on the PGA Tour.
That's great. Well, much luck to you and much success to you. I'll definitely be rooting for you and following along. So I love to hear stories like that.
Absolutely. And Willie, how did you get your start? I know back in the day we had the Buick Open in Flint, and that was one of the tournaments that Tiger would always come to because he had his relationship with Buick. What was your inspiration in starting in golf?
Just watching Tiger Woods. Me and my dad would just go to the golf dome in Flint, and he started just when I did, so nobody in my family was playing golf until me and him started, and after a couple of years, I got addicted to it and just kept with it. Glad they're bringing back a PGA Tour event actually to Detroit next year, so hopefully I can get into that.
Man, that would be fantastic. Hey, look, man, you get your rest. You go play well this week, and we're going to get you back on when we got a little more time and you got a little more time. Get your rest. Hit it straight tomorrow. Thank you so much, Willie, and congratulations on that record-setting 12 under par 60 that you shot the other day.
Yeah, that is great.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you guys.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Willie.
Okay.
Man.
All right.
And Todd, you talk about the power of athletes to impact people, and you see an example of that right there with Willie Mack III. In Flint, we used to have the Buick Open, as I mentioned. He went out, as everybody did, to see Tiger. Is that the power? What is it, the attraction that the athletes have to gather a following such as that?
What's the attraction that athletes have to follow? So what did you say?
What is it that, you know, really talk about the impact Tiger had on him?
Oh yeah! Oh, definitely. I mean, so younger aspiring golf players are going to be watching him and be inspired by him. I mean, that's just the way that it is. You know, I was inspired by athletes like Wayman Tisdale. You know, came from my high school, came and spoke to my middle school. You know what I mean? Lee Mayberry, John Starks, all in Tulsa. I was inspired by all of them. You know, and that's just the beauty of, you know, that, you know, when I go and I speak to a lot of different schools, I know that a lot of these young people, you know, just by the fact that I play the NBA, you know, just by the fact when they introduce me, they say he played, and they might not have never seen, they might have to look me up to even remember, you know what I mean, that I even played. They had no idea. But the fact that I played in the NBA, that'll make them listen to what I have to say. So I'll say something positive to them, tell them, you know what I mean, the same things that their parents or their teachers or their pastors, whoever's telling them, but they'll hear it coming from me just because I played in the NBA. And that's that power of athletes. You know, that's the power of the athlete voice. And, you know, I experienced it myself when I was younger. I mean, we had Wayman Tisdale came, spoke to us. We listened to everything that Wayman Tisdale said, every single word. You know, I mean, we were sitting up at attention. And that's just the way that
it is. Does it disappoint you? Does it disappoint you when guys don't use that that power? A guy like Tiger, well, you got to give Tiger credit with his foundation has impacted, you know, thousands of kids. But in terms of some of the social issues, he's always seemed to shy away.
Yeah, he does.
And it's so ironic. It's so ironic he's done that, considering he played a game of golf where up until 1960, the PGA Constitution said the game to be played by members of the Caucasian race only.
Yeah, that's true. I'll agree with that. But then also you have to look at the number of guys that are using their voices, like the LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony's and Dwayne Wade's and everybody. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of course you want more people to, and you're always going to want more people to. In a perfect world, everybody would use their voice. You know what I mean? But the reality is that everybody doesn't have the same calling. You know what I mean? Everybody doesn't have that in them. So I can't require it for somebody who doesn't have that in them, and that's not a part of who they are, because then it won't come off as authentic. Some people, you know, because one of the things, when you do speak out on something, you know, if you're not ready to defend your position, you're going to be made to look a buffoon, because you're immediately going to be attacked by the other side. And you have to, you know, sometimes some people, it's better off for them not talking. Because they might say the wrong thing, and they might, you know, say something and then make everybody look all crazy and something like that. So if you're not ready to talk, if you're not ready to properly express your position and go into depth about it, you know, you have to do your homework. You have to. And that's one of the things, Alonzo Mourning in my book, where I interviewed him, and that was his point. He was like, no, guys have to, if they do talk, they have to be ready and prepared, because the media is immediately going to attack you. And they're going to try to Laura Ingram you to make it sound like you're not qualified to speak, and then tell you to just shut up and go back and dribble, or shut up and go play your football or something like that. They're just waiting to do that. So,
we got another special guest that's called in, a former NBA player with the New Jersey Nets and a good friend of this show, and talking about a brother not afraid to speak out. Our good friend Derek Gervin is checking in with us. Derek, hey, brother, you're on with Faton Thomas and Michael Robinson and Ricky Hampton on the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. And Derek has his own podcast called Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast. Hey, what's up, brother Derek?
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
Doing fantastic.
Can you guys hear me?
What do you think?
Yeah,
we got you.
Yeah, I'm doing fine. How you doing, Etan? Yeah, I can hear you. Etan, how you doing, my man?
Oh, how you doing, sir? You doing all right?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm a younger brother of George, man, George Gervin.
Okay. Oh, that's
fun. Yeah, so, I actually played with D.C. I played with Derek Coleman with the Nets.
Oh, okay. Yeah, D.C., that's the man right there. I'm sure you have a lot of good stories.
Yeah. And how you doing? And Mr. Robinson, same to you. How you doing, my man?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Good to hear from you, brother.
You too.
Hey, what's your thoughts on the conversation that you've been listening to so far, Derek? And tell us about the work you're doing down in San Antonio with your youth program.
Well, it's pretty much Etan covered it. Everything that he's talked about, I've been listening. I think it's been a fantastic show. I think we're all in the same boat. We care about these kids. We want to see them get their due. I think sometimes people forget, you know, people are getting paid, making their living off of these kids. And that includes the college guys as well. To me, they're still pretty much kids. They're young adults, but they still got a lot to learn. It saddens me with some of the stuff that's going on today. I've been involved now. I've been coaching. I started coaching about 2 years ago. So I've gotten involved in the AAU and all these different leagues. I'm learning as I go. It's been interesting. Man, it's like a lot of exploitation going on. And it saddens me because anytime you see these kids, I heard you guys talk about Michigan earlier. And you got, you know, they invented their own style. And then you got people wearing these kids' jerseys. You look around, you know, they've been treated. They get the treatment of athletes, but they don't get the payment of stars. And it saddens me because all these guys deserve to be paid. If you're making money off of these guys, people like them that much where they buy their equipment and all that, I think they deserve to get paid. So I'm with you guys. I've never had a problem speaking out about that. I'm just glad there are other people that are starting to come forward. And I'm just, you know, I'm glad to be on the show tonight, and I think you guys are doing a great thing.
All right.
Hey, Mike, while we got two veterans of the National Basketball Association on here, we can't let these guys get out of here with not asking some stuff about the free agency signing period And I'm going to let you tip it off, Mike.
All right. Well, Etan, first of all, I just want to kind of get to this angle. So you talked about Tisdale being a big influence, so OU was a big deal back then. But then later on, you get pro basketball in Oklahoma. So what was that like? And then you happened to play for that team. So what was it like playing for that team? Then, of course, you play with KD.
Oh, it was absolutely amazing.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And I was playing there with a young Russell Westbrook and James Harden's rookie year. And, you know, Serge Ibaka just coming into the league as a rookie. And, you know, KD still coming into his own. Like, if they was able to keep that team together, I mean, they probably won at least one or two championships by now. I mean, they had a special young unit. But
right.
the city of Oklahoma City, they were so happy just to have a professional team. So it felt like a college atmosphere.
Right.
It was really a great atmosphere. But I really wish they would have been able to keep them together. I mean, they really could have been special, to be honest with you.
Hey, I got this for Tom and for Derek. You guys see where DeMarcus Cousins signs with Golden State. He signs for $5 million. And, you know, I covered pro sports, you know, a long time. I know brothers always say you don't count another man's money. But what are your thoughts on a guy taking that exception when he's worth a lot more? Start with you, Derek.
Well, you say you want to start with me? Okay,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, okay, all right. So if I was in that position, I could say that. I'm not, you know, it's kind of hard to say, you know, because there's some reports that say that he didn't get any offers. Then another report said that actually the Pelicans made him an offer during the season, but he turned it down, you know. But, you know, hey, if he wants to gamble on himself, you know, he's coming off of an injury. I mean, you see other people. I don't want to, you know, like you said, I don't want to count anybody's money. But I remember when Chandler Parsons, I might be messing up his name, but he made $100 million after coming off of his injury. And DeMarcus Cousins is, what, the top one or two centers in the league?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm sure you're looking at that and looking like, well, wait a minute now. You know, I've proven myself. I've been to the Olympics. I don't, what else do I have to do right now? It's in order to be able to get this big payday. He played all those years on a terrible team in Sacramento. They stuck him with George Karl, who is all no former player says anything good about. So they stuck him with him. You know what I mean? And he's battling all. He's still putting up numbers and playing hard every night. I mean, I understand his frustration. It just doesn't seem like, you know, almost like he was trying to give a big middle finger to everybody and said, okay, I'm gonna go play for Golden State. And see how y'all like that, since y'all don't want to give me no good offer. And I mean, I can't even imagine. It's like they have an all-star team right now. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like that team could compete in the Olympics right now, and they would dominate. So
yeah.
I can't even really imagine how that's going to look with him. You know, I mean, I don't know. Has that ever happened where and the number one or two, the best center in the league, you know, went to a team that was the back-to-back champions? I mean, I don't know if that's happened before, but it's pretty amazing.
No.
Derek?
Well, I told you I'm on my podcast. I thought it was a good decision for him. You know, they had the rumor that no other team wanted him, which I find kind of crazy and hard to believe.
Yeah.
Right.
But
yeah, right.
He made a good decision for himself. I mean, this might be what it takes. I mean, he had an injury. You rehab, and I told you, if I feel if a team really wants you and they're willing to take the risk, and a team such as Golden State, I mean, it's nothing but an honor. The money, I don't really think is a big issue. I think the guy still somehow he's set. He's financially set, and I know he's still young, but he will get another opportunity. Even at 85%, DeMarcus Cousins is better than 90% of the big men out there.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it goes well this year. And he gets a chance to resurrect his career. One thing I will say about him that I've been proud of, this year you didn't hear about any discipline issues. So I'm proud of that. I mean, he's made improvement. We're all young, you know, we all make mistakes. He's grown, he's matured. So anybody that does that, I want to see him end up well. So I hope that actually he gets a championship this year and gets a chance to resurrect his career and get another Big Max contract. That's what I hope for, that he can get that Big Max.
Okay. Right. You're listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com talk show with Michael Robinson and Ricky Hampton. We only got a few more minutes here in a time. We want to thank you, man, for spending this time with us this evening. As we finish up, Mike, I'm sure you have a question or two before we go.
Right. Right. Okay, well, so Etan, this is going to get more into your personal deal. But, okay, so your name comes from an Egyptian pharaoh. And then also, could you comment on the traumatic moment you had October 11, 2007? So what you had to go through with that, with your heart, and then also having that Egyptian name, and have you been to Egypt yourself?
Okay. Well, I haven't been to Egypt. I've been to Kenya. I have a whole lot of different places I need to go to on my list. Egypt is definitely one of them. Want to go to Ethiopia, got to go to Ghana, got to go to, you know, South Africa. There's a lot of different places I got to go to. But it was an honor. Akhenaten is an Egyptian pharaoh. My mother was really into the Egyptian culture and Egyptian history. And so, you're referring to what I went to when I had open heart surgery. So I was playing,
I was playing
with the Wizards, and I always had a leaky valve. That's something that I had since I was like in middle school. So I always had to kind of monitor it and kind of watch it. But yeah, right before training camp, I have my routine test with EKGs and the echoes and things of that nature. And, you know, they said, something has changed a little bit. Now you might have to go in there and do something. And I was like, right now, right before training camp. You know what I mean? I done worked all this summer and stuff like that, ready to go. But, but it was a blessing because, of course, it could always have been worse. You know, they just, all I needed to do was have a valve replacement. And, I came back and I, was able to play a few more years and, have no problems with everything now. So I'm blessed. Definitely blessed. And, so I talked to a lot of other players, that have had what I've had, like Ronnie Turiaf. And, I talked to him a lot. And then Jeff Green, who had a valve replacement, I was able to speak to him a lot. Just the way somebody was able to speak to me and give him encouragement, let him know that he was going to be just fine. And, don't worry about the media that's going to write you off and say, he's done. You know what I mean? But that's why it was great to see him have success, especially this year. Sometimes, when people are a blessing to you, you're a blessing to somebody else. So.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Absolutely. Hey, Derek. The NBA from the time you played, and I know we've talked to you about this before in the past, but I want you to get into it a little bit with Etan here as a former player himself. The growth of the game, the development of the game from the time you played in the 90s today, what is different about it in your estimation? What do you like about it? What you don't like about it?
Well, what I like about it is the game continues to grow. I've talked about the old school, and I told you, me being old school, I've kind of softened up. These guys want to keep comparing LeBron and Mike and all that stuff. To me, it's a comparison that doesn't really need to be made. They're both great players. They both done the best things for the game. They've made the game grow. And we move on, and we move on to something else. Now we got all these young players that are bringing all these different talents and all these different levels of talents to the game. You got new guys, Intrigue, Trae Young, all these guys, and you got a lot of fans that they want to know what's going on. So I'm happy. I'm looking forward to this coming season. It's changed from my day. It's just a different game. I mean, you got social media now, and that's big. And I'm liking Adam Silver. I just like what I'm seeing. I'm changing over from being one of those guys kind of, you had some old school that was kind of angry, and they don't want to give LeBron credit. Everybody's hanging on the Michael Jordan thing. to me, I've decided both of those guys and Kareem Jabbar and Wilt, all those guys are on the Mount Rushmore. So it doesn't have
to
be four guys.
Any of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be four guys. The game is going to continue to evolve, and I love what I'm seeing. And, Rick, can I say this in 10 seconds? Etan, man, it's really
absolutely
been a pleasure. Man, I'm just telling you, to have four African-Americans on here that could articulate, we're breaking down that myth, man. I'm so tired of people saying what black people can't do. So
right.
I applaud you other three gentlemen on here, man. I mean, I'm just getting a high off of that. Four black African-American men that can articulate. So we're taking over, and I'm proud to be around you guys, talking with
definitely,
you guys.
Definitely, and much respect to all of y'all as well. I definitely agree with everything that you just said.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely a myth all the time around black men. And so it's always great to be sitting here and just conversing. We're just talking about different things going on in society, breaking things down, you know, with basketball and with life. So I think it's a very beautiful thing that and a beautiful platform that you all have. So definitely appreciate you inviting me on the show.
Okay, Tom, before you go, is there anything you would like our listeners to know, to think about going forward in terms of activism, in terms of being involved in their community? You know, we have an important election cycle coming up. Can you speak about what would you like to see, especially our young listeners, focus in on going forward? And also, I want to let you know that the African-American Athlete, we're going to be sponsoring some forums in the upcoming year as we celebrate 50 years since Mexico City, that I'd like to talk to you about maybe speaking or taking part in. But what would you like to see our listeners focus in on or look to do in their respective communities around the country?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, not even just – I mean, there's so much going on right now, you know, with the current occupant of the White House. Things are changing a lot. You know, I was just reading about where, you know, he's trying to do away with affirmative action in universities. And just knowing that they know good and well that everybody's not getting the same education throughout the high schools of this country. But they want to just say that, you know, act as if they are and judge them by the same standards and say, okay, we're going to pretend like they're all getting the same education, you know, but it's a big setup. So we just have to really keep educating each other on what exactly is going on, and knowing that we don't have any time to not get out and vote, not to be participants, not to be aware. You know, it's one thing to post about something or tweet about something, but you have to be actively involved in who is in office, and that goes for local as well as the president of the United States. I mean, the local maybe even more, because that's who is the deputy sheriff of your community, who is the, you know, when you are you know, giving up. Sometimes in these elections, these past elections that we've had, we look at the voter turnout and it's so low. I'm like, wow, how could it be that low of a percentage of people that are coming out to voting? But then if you don't come out and vote, then you can't really complain when things are not what you want it to be. So we really just have to encourage each other to really be involved in this political process, because it that's determined of if your children's school are going to have the proper funding, if you're going to have to deal with you know, police that are not going to be held accountable in your county. You know what I mean? I mean, all these major things that are going to be determined by you deciding not to vote. So I would really want, you know, for the listeners, just to really encourage each other to really be aware and not so much reactionary or, you know, after different rights are taken away, but before, because we see what's about to happen. You know what I mean? We see what has been happening, and we know what we can't allow to happen again. So that's, you know, I didn't want to start going off on a tangent here, but it's just, you're reading the news and seeing the stuff that's going on, you're like, oh, my gosh, can it get any worse? And every time I say it can't get any worse, it gets worse. You know, so we have a long way to go.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, I was going to speak of that, Etan. So what was it like you playing in D.C.? And you caught the end of when Barack came in. So what was that like having Barack president while you were playing there for the Wizards?
Oh, well, I was actually a surrogate for President Obama. So I, you know, was actually campaigning for him, and I was active. I started getting involved with President Obama when he was a community, what was he, in Chicago, because I really didn't like Alan Keyes, who was running against him. So that's how I got even connected to Obama in the first place, and then I just kind of continued after that. So I was, you know, he appointed me to the Fatherhood Initiative after I wrote a fatherhood book, and you know, as part of my brother's keeper. So I was, you know, invited to all the different, you know, functions and speaking at different places and things of that nature. And I was involved in both elections, you know, in 2008 and in 2012. So, you know, it was, but to see going from that, now I he wasn't the perfect president. Nobody's perfect. You know, so I definitely had different things that I disagreed policy wise from him, but to see where we were to where we are now, it's like, goodness gracious. I mean, I don't even know what to even say, you know, so we have a long way to go. That's all you can say.
Etan, where can people follow you and tell us about where we can pick up your book? I think it's Athletes and Activism. Is the
right.
Book.
It's We Matter, Athletes and Activism. And you can pick it up on Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, you know, local bookstores. I usually order my stuff on Amazon, and they just kind of deliver it to the house. You know, that's kind of, I don't know, that's the new trend of how we do it. But it's on Amazon. And you can follow me on Twitter, AtanThomas36, and on Facebook, it's just Etan Thomas, and my website is AtanThomas.com, and then you can see all the stuff that I'm doing. I'll be speaking. I'll be going back on a college tour here in the fall, so I'll be speaking at different universities and colleges, and panel discussions and things of that nature, all surrounding activism and athletes and activism.
Absolutely.
And,
that's very important.
I'll be pretty busy.
I'm going to be reaching out to you in regards to that. Hopefully, we can get you on at one of our forums at some point this year. But my brother, we really appreciate you. We're honored to have you, and hopefully you'll come back and visit us real soon.
Definitely, definitely. Thanks again for having me. Y'all have a good night.
All right.